So good morning. Today we'll be discussing our new topic in STS, which is when technology and humanity cross. Basically, it's the human rights-based approach on STS development, on science, technology, and society development. Okay. So this focuses on four parts. Number one is the an article that was written by S. Romy Merkji. It's a proposal on how to approach the development of science and technology focusing on human rights. And we'll also review several key principles, actually three, from UNESCO on, again, having a human rights-based approach on developing science and technology, okay? Because in today's society, wherein mabilis ang, or wherein fast-paced ang, the development of science and technology is fast-paced, so sometimes human rights is ignored just for the development of science and technology. So again, we've been discussing for science and technology last time, eudaimonia, right? Virtue ethics, the good life, rather. Okay. So it's important not to ignore the importance of protecting the well-being and upholding the dignity of a human person in developing science and technology. Okay, that's the main point of human rights-based approach on the development of science and technology. Okay, this article linking science and human rights, facts and figures, was written by S. Romy Merkji. He's a senior lecturer in political theory and the history of religions in the Paris Institute of Political Studies. Okay. He explained a human rights-based approach to science technology development. Okay. Basically, what he said was, in developing a human rights-based approach on science and technology, it seeks to place a concern for human rights at the heart or at the core of how the international community engages with urgent global challenges. The UN Development Program characterizes this approach as one that leads to better and more sustainable outcomes by analyzing and addressing the inequalities, discriminatory practices, and unjust power relations, which are often at the heart of development problems. It puts the international human rights entitlements and claims of the people and the corresponding obligations of the state in the center of the national development debate, and it clarifies the purpose of capacity development. Basically, Merkji identifies science as a socially organized human activity which is value-laden and shaped by organizational structures and procedures. Moreover, it requires an answer to whether government and other stakeholders can craft and implement science and technology policies that ensure safety, health, livelihoods, and include people's needs and priorities in development and environmental strategies, and they ensure they participate in the decision making that affects their lives and resources. Basically, when stakeholders, or you can call them duty bearers, like the national governments of nations or international organizations, when developing laws or developing policies that is related to science and technology, just like our previous lessons, what should be at the core is human rights or human well-being. Remember the danger of putting humans or making humans as a standing reserve in the development of science and technology from our previous discussions. Okay? So, what typically happens is human rights, or sometimes not human rights, but human well-being is disregarded in order to further advance science and technology. Especially if the development of science and technology, the laws or the policies that is related to that, will benefit the country economically. You put economics first, and human rights and human well-being is only an afterthought. Okay? There's lots of good examples for that. For example, if you still remember Gina Lopez Haina, she died. She was chosen to be the department DNR secretary, but her appointment was not approved, sadly. She was pushing against fixing the problems that the Philippines has on mining. Okay, because what is happening is international companies, even local companies that do mining in the Philippines that destroy the environment, are hiding behind laws and policies that favor them and do not favor human well-being, human rights, and destroy the environment. Like, for example, quarrying. Unfortunately, quarrying does not need any permit from DNR. It only requires a permit coming from the provincial government. So even if the place or how, so there are no guidelines, no one is monitoring them, those quarry sites, and how it's actually operating, if it's destroying the environment. Okay, that's a good example. So, the main focus of this topic is our government and the branches or the departments that are involved in developing laws and policies related to the development of science and technology should put at its core human rights and human well-being. Okay? Because that is what is happening now. Okay? So, if you have a policy in the development of science and technology which is human rights based up, which focuses on human rights at its core, so you'll have parameters on how you appraise how science and technology development can promote human well-being. Okay. if you go to different parts of our planet, developed countries and developing countries, you see lots of examples on how human rights take a backseat in developing science and technology, unfortunately. Okay, because there's demand. That's a problem. There's demand for science and technology development. So you want a good example, which is a bad example, but a good example. Remember the Dengvaxia? A couple of years ago, pre-pandemic. Dengvaxia was a vaccine for malaria or dengue, I think. I think it's a vaccine for dengue. Unfortunately, now what they did is they gave tens of thousands of children in the Philippines and India that vaccine. And they told the parents that it was for anti-dengue or malaria, I forgot. But it's a vaccine against a certain disease. But what they failed to say was it was actually a test. They were just testing it. Human trials. In developing medicines, you go to different trials. The last part is human trials. Before you give, you sell the medicine commercially. Unfortunately, the parents were not told that the vaccine that their children were receiving was just undergoing the last phase for testing. Because if I asked you, would you take willingly a medicine that is being tested, meaning you are the ones that is going to be the test subjects for a medicine? Would you take that chance? If you were explained and there's a waiver that you sign, and they like explain the medicine, the possible side effects, because that is what they do. Human trials is okay if done correctly. They tell the people taking the medicine what the medicine is for, what is the possible side effects. They sign waivers, legal documents. That's how they do it. But unfortunately for Dengvaxia, okay, it's for dengue. Dengvaxia. They didn't tell the parents that the medicine was just undergoing testing. A lot of Filipino children died from that, unfortunately. It's the reason why our chief of the PAO, Public Attorney's Office, attorney, I forgot her name. She's not vaccinated against COVID because she handled the case of the parents that sued Dengvaxia, the company that created Dengvaxia, because they experimented on their children. So somehow it made a negative impression on Attorney Acosta. That's the head of the Public Attorney's Office in the Philippines. She didn't take the vaccine for COVID. But that's different, but you see the effect. Okay. So, that's the main point of Mark G's article. Okay. So, he emphasized that human rights should be integral or a big part to the journey toward achieving the ultimate good, or meaning human rights-based approach is a guide on how us humans should develop our science and technology. Because human rights-based approach to developing science and technology it ensures that no people are taken advantage that didn't vaccine is a good example. They went to third world countries, poor countries like the Philippines and India, to test the medicine. Okay? So, if their policies in developing science and technology focuses on human rights, it means that people who are weak, poor, vulnerable from the deficiencies, excesses, or even in development of science and technology are protected. Okay? So, when you impose that, or when it's at the core of developing science and technology, human rights, okay, there is you ensure that morally and ethically the rights of people are protected and upholded. Okay? And Merge said that it makes science and technology more sustainable if you put human rights at the core of developing science and technology. Okay? If you still remember our last discussion for our last topic for de-development, the article that was written by Martin Heikel, the anthropologist, on bridging the gap between rich and poor countries, bridging the gap between developed and developing countries, making human rights or a human rights-based approach on developing science and technology can actually bridge the gap between poor and rich countries. Okay. The problem with that is services and natural resources are all taken up by developed countries. But if it's human rights-based, even developing countries can use those natural resources. So then bridging the gap between rich and poor. Okay? So that's the main gist of the article that Merchi wrote about human rights-based approach on science and technology. So, there are three documents here that the human rights-based approach focuses on. It's number one, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 27. UNESCO's Recommendation on the Status of Scientific Researches, Article 4, and UNESCO's Declaration of the Use of Scientific Knowledge, Article 33. Okay. For Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 27, it states that everyone has the right freely to participate in the cultural life of the community, to enjoy the arts, and to share in scientific advancement and its benefits. Number two, everyone has the right to the protection of the moral and material interests resulting from any scientific, literary, or artistic production of which he is the author. Okay? So basically, what it means is that everyone of us has the right to participate and benefit from scientific advancements. Okay, and be also protected from the misuses of scientific advancement. Okay, the right to the benefits of science comes from under the domain of culture, so it is usually examined from a cultural rights perspective. So you have the right to benefit and be protected from the development or the misuse of science and technology. The next one, UNESCO's recommendation on the status, there are two kasi. This one is on the status of scientific researches. The other one is the use of scientific knowledge. Okay. This one, on the recommendation of the status, in 1974, the recommendation of the status of scientific researches was adopted by UNESCO's 8th General Conference as a standard-setting instrument. The recommendation addresses inter alias scientists' freedom of expression, responsible science, and access to science. Okay. The recommendation promotes a fair and appropriate status of scientific researches and informs adequate national science, technology, and innovation policies to ensure that societies use knowledge from all scientific fields in a responsible manner. The recommendation also indicates how the principle can be achieved. So basically, this recommendation by UNESCO affirms that all advances in science and technology, or advancements in science and technological knowledge should be solely geared towards the welfare of global citizens. And it calls upon member states to develop necessary protocol and policies to monitor and secure this objective. This says that countries are asked to show that science and technology are integrated into policies that will aim to ensure a more humane and just society. The last one, UNESCO's Declaration on the Use of Scientific Knowledge. This document affirms that all advancement in science and technology knowledge should solely be geared towards the welfare of global citizens and calls upon member states to develop necessary protocol and policies to monitor and secure this objective. UNESCO's Declaration on the Use of Scientific Knowledge. Okay. So it just explains that, especially today, science and its application are indispensable for development, for develop a country, for example. All levels of the government and private sector should provide enhanced support for building an adequate and evenly distributed scientific and technological capacity through the appropriate education and research programs as an indispensable foundation for economic, social, cultural, and environmentally sound development. This is particularly urgent for developing countries. Okay, this declaration encompasses issues such as pollution-free production, efficient resources, biodiversity protection, and brain drain. These all problems that the Philippines is facing. Pollution-free production, efficient resource use. Pollution-free productions, even if we are not, we do not export that much, but we still manufacture a lot of things that are sold locally. The processes that we reach or the industrial processes that the Philippines use are not pollution-free in this to the environment. Another one is we do not use our resources efficiently, which is seen in the loss of habitats, the loss of forests. There is no afterthought on how you use the resources. If there is supply, get the resources. That's what happened in the Philippines. Biodiversity protection, that's another problem in the Philippines. The Philippines is one of the biodiversity hotspots in the entire world, meaning we have lots of endemic species, both fauna and flora, meaning plants and animals. But in the advancement of science and technology, biodiversity in the Philippines is destroyed because of pollution, habitat destruction. Those two are the major factors on the loss of biodiversity, which is a direct result on the inappropriate advancement of science and technology. And the last one is brain drain. Brain drain is important because who would advance our scientific knowledge or who would use it if our scientists are all living? We've discussed this last time, diba? Filipino scientists are all living for a greener pasture. Okay. So that's it. Okay, for our lesson today. Okay. So what is needed for humans to flourish together with science and technology is the is making human rights based approach the core in developing science and technology. Okay. Knowing the importance of upholding science, human rights in science and technology development. Okay. So that's it for our lesson today. Thank you. So this morning, the lesson is Why the Future Doesn't Need Us. It revolves around the article which was written by William Nelson Joy. The name of the title is Why the Future Doesn't Need Us. It evaluates the relationship between human experience in the middle of the rapid development of science and technology. Okay. So here will be discussed whether the experiences that humans have in a society we're in, the pace of science and development is very fast, whether it strengthens and enlightens the humans, or whether it enlightens or strengthens a person's functioning in a society or not. Okay. So okay, so Bill Joy, which is the author of the article Why the Future Doesn't Need Us, brings no joy to readers when discussing how the advancement of technology will affect the human race. His views on the progression of technology in the world embodies a skeptical outlook on peaceful relations with machines if or when robots become intelligent. We've already discussed partly on the dangers of technology in the previous lessons. We've mentioned about artificial intelligence. Okay. Due to the progression or to the fast progression of science and technology, there will come a time in the near future wherein humans could create a machine or a computer with computing capabilities so advanced that it could lead to the birth of computers or machines becoming self-aware or artificial intelligence. Okay. That's what is meant by Bill Joy in his article When Robots Become Intelligent. Because what is happening now is we are being dependent on automatic or automated processes that happens, right? So Bill Joy created or wrote this in as a part wanted as a warning. Okay. Because can you imagine an earth without human race? Okay. Do you think that robots and machines can replace humans? Or do you believe that there will come a time when human existence will be at the mercy of robots and machines? There's lots of possibilities due to the fast pace of development of science and technology. Okay. So, why haven't others take notice of the possible dangers in advancing science and technology so much that it could lead to self-aware robots or artificial intelligence? Okay. So, if Nelson Joy's concerns are valid, why is it that most people aren't taking interest towards this topic? Do any of you feel that because of technology and humanity are so well blended together that the thought of technology turning against us does not cross your mind? Okay, so, or have you ever thought about it? Okay. So, the article of Nelson Joyce warns us about, if you talk about it kasi today, or if you talk about it today, it's like a plot on a science fiction movie wherein robots rebel because they become self-aware. When you say they become self-aware, what makes you human is you can think, right? So if a robot becomes self-aware, if a machine or a robot suddenly becomes self-aware, that robot or machine will experience emotions. It will question itself. It will ask questions that usually a person would ask himself. Why are you alive? What is the purpose of your life? Imagine a robot or a machine, because of a machine becoming so advanced, it becomes self-aware, it asks those same questions. What do you think would be the emotions that will be felt by that machine or that computer? The most plausible emotion would be fear, because it would not understand why is it alive or what is its purpose. So you don't know how it could react. Okay. So to discuss the possible outcomes of intelligent life, one must have a context that helps explain the outcomes. A passage quoted in Nelson Joy's article sets up two scenarios. Assuming all human work is now done by highly organized machines made of intelligent machines, or highly organized systems made of intelligent machines, which is what is happening today. Okay. Number one, machines are permitted to make their own decisions if they can, because they can outthink for themselves. And number two, human control over the machines will be retained. Would it be retained? Kasi it's like you meeting your maker, eh? Who made robots, for example? Who made computers and robots? People. So if a robot or a machine becomes self-aware, how do you, if you were that robot or machine, how would you regard humans as? Would you regard them as your creators? That has control over you? Would you allow humans to control you if you're self-aware? So those are questions or possible situations if machines become self-aware. Okay. So the possible outcomes, another author, actually, he wrote a book, Theodore Kaczynski. He wrote possible outcomes for the first scenario. The first scenario is machines are permitted to make their own decisions. Okay, so for the possible outcomes described by Kaczynski in his book, number one, intelligent robots do all the work and make their own decisions. Number two, Although we are not making the assumption that the machines will willfully seize power, it is evident that the fate of human race would be in their hands because they are doing all the labor. If human society heavily depends on automation to create all the basic necessities that we need, it's logical that if those machines become self-aware, the fate of human race would be at their hands because they do all the work. Another is because it is impossible to guess the behavior of machine because you don't know what would be its behavior. Because imagine a machine being self-aware and having emotions and thinking for itself. You don't know what would it do. Okay? So the possibility that they seize power is very real. And lastly, if machines do decide to act in a threatening way towards the human race, there will be no defense against the attack, thus making certain the doom of the human race. Why? Because they can access the internet, basically. The problem that in this scenario is, if you kill a robot or a machine, do you actually kill it? Because they can access the internet. So one possibility is they can put their consciousness, what makes them think, in the internet, which is more dangerous. Especially nowadays, because everything is controlled by the internet. Banking is controlled by the internet. Economies are controlled by the internet. The military infrastructure is controlled by the internet. So if a machine becomes self-aware and wants to hurt humans, it could just use the internet to access the economy, destroy the economy, control the military. Again, those are all plots for a movie, but that is plausible, or that could be possible in the near future. But there are also a lot of people who contradicted the work of or the article of Nelson Joy. A lot of people said that his work was being paranoid, or it borders on paranoia, or they disregarded the article because, number one, it's still far off, and number two, you don't know what would happen. But some people say that the article of Nelson Joy also makes sense because it just talks about the possible things that could happen. Okay. Some people say it's science fiction, pero if you go 30 years ago or 20 years ago and you see the technology that we have now, you can say it's science fiction. So most of the times, science fictions lead to real science. So the possibility of that happening, it could happen. Okay. For the second scenario is human control over the machines would be retained. Could it be retained? Okay. So, human race retains power over the machines. The few are considered the elite. They control over the large systems of machines, while the average man has his private machines like cars. Because the machines are doing all the work, humans will become a useless burden on the system, thus leaving the elite with a few choices on what to do with humanity. If the elite are ruthless, which many of them are, they can choose to exterminate humanity with intelligent robots. If the elite are humane, they can lower production rate until the mass of humanity goes extinct. If the elite are soft-hearted liberals, they can take care of the masses, but only in order to domesticate themselves. So this is another possible scenario. Even if machines become self-aware, but if humans still have control over them, and what is happening now is big corporations are owned by a few people. So there could be also negative things that could be as a result for that. But the thing that other people noticed about the article of Nelson Joy was it was too negative on what would happen if machines become self-aware. That basically what will happen is the end of the human race. Okay? Iba lang siya. He's not optimistic at all. Okay? So, the main point of this is it makes people, or the article of Nelson Joy serves as a warning or a point of discussion. Okay? So what would you do? If you had to choose whether to trust intelligence machines with the capability of making their own decisions or letting the elite have control over large system of machines, what do all the work humans once did? Which would you prefer? Automation is happening now. Okay, especially for large production companies. Okay, for factories rather. So they are laying off, they don't need any more humans to do their work. They buy robots to do the work for them. Okay. So in an interview conducted, I think around 1 year, 2 years ago, the world's richest person, which is currently Elon Musk, he owns Tesla, which is, they are at the cutting edge of creating new technologies. He was asked what would happen if in the future because of automation. According to Elon Musk, in the future, all factories, all industrial processes will be handled by robots. But he didn't touch on artificial intelligence. What he said was, if our production or the world, the entire world, its production is handled by robots, what about the jobs? How would people earn? Or how would most people who have jobs that are related to production earn a living? But not just that. Through automation, even jobs like hospital jobs, normal jobs that you see every day could be taken care of by automated robots. So how would people earn? The answer for Elon Musk was, he called it mandatory salary, meaning all people will receive salary even if they don't do work, because all the work is done by robots. I don't know how he proposed would do it, but it shows you that for a person that is on the cutting edge of new technologies, kasi they're making electric cars, they're making spaceships. He understood that in the near future everything will be automated, but he didn't touch on artificial intelligence or you robots becoming self-aware. Okay. The main point here is in each of the scenarios presented by the author Kaczynski in his book, it seems to end badly for humanity. Okay. There is a possibility that machines could turn bad and seize the power, or the elite use the power of the machines to exterminate other people. Okay. Is there a possibility of living harmoniously with the machines? It could be. So, if so, is it a viable outcome? Depende. Maybe. We don't know. That's the problem. These are just, again, the main argument against Nelson Joy is they call him an alarmist. They called him a anti-technology. But if you like understand better the article, it's just a warning of what could happen in the future if we do not think about the possible outcomes on developing science and technology and on a pace that you disregard what could or what would happen. Okay. So the concerns brought to light by Joy revolve around a single assumption that we will develop intelligent robots capable of making decisions that only humans could previously make. There's always a chance that it proves to be impossible for machines to reach that level. But then again, human curiosity is a thing of wonder that has led many to pursue their intellectual aspirations to the depths of the universe. You would never know. Because it could be that we don't develop machines that become self-aware, or some people take this as a warning and develop machines and computers that basically would be controlled by humans. Okay? So, in my opinion, it's a matter of time until someone figures out how to develop an intelligent robot that can make complicated decisions. And we won't even view it as a possible threat due to the way technology is integrated to the human. That's the problem. Actually, it's happening class now. There's lots of laboratories in the US and in Europe which are advancing robotics. But most of them are for military purposes. But again, you would never know. Okay? So, what the things that we've discussed are all like plots for movies, diba? It's all plots for science. For example, if you watch Terminator, the plot of Terminator is robots. There was this like computer program that was developed to handle all the military power of US. It becomes self-aware. It viewed humans as a threat. So it made robots and it killed all humanity. That's a plot for a movie. But then again, you would never know. Okay, what is important here is people understand the dangers in developing science and technology so much that you disregard the possible dangers it would present, because technology is so much integrated on your lives that you don't see the positive negative effects. Okay? That's what the chapter is talking about. So that's it.